Welcome to Manager Tools. Don't get rid of your performance reviews. Part two. Here we go. This cast answers these questions. Should my organization get rid of its performance review system? How can I deliver better performance reviews? What can I do to help subordinate managers deliver effective performance reviews? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
This week's guidance about the performance review system is brought to you by Roadmap, Manager Tools' new application available to all licensees, which will help you roll out the Trinity one-on-ones and feedback, and also report on your one-on-ones and feedback, and also allow you to see how managers who report to you and managers who report to them, any manager in your organization, is doing with his or her rollout and ongoing one-on-ones and feedback. And the reason why is simple. We want to make it easy. Everybody's got a phone in their hand. And because the things that get measured are the things that get done. Please check out Roadmap at www.manager-tools.com.
So, Mark, last week, I think you proved to the audience that performance reviews are broken, as if we needed to convince anybody of that. And the solution is not to eliminate performance reviews. There are purposes of performance reviews, and we should fix the problems as opposed to just doing the what we hear more and more these days is eliminating performance reviews.
Yeah, I played golf with an old friend yesterday afternoon and explained to him about the cast. And I told him, I said, one of the most significant things I think we said in the cast was the part about if you're new, if you're young, if you're inexperienced, and you think that you don't understand the system, and so the fact that you dislike it is your issue. But in 5 years, somebody will say, when you're a manager, you'll understand. You know, I remember hearing that for the first time, a manager about confidentiality of some things. You know, I said, why does this have to be confidential? It would really help me to know this and this and this so I could go to this. He says, you know, all I can tell you is I'm your boss, and I gave my word, and there's a reason. And if I told you the reason, you'd know what I was withholding from you. And it was one of those things where when I got more experience, when I had more responsibility, I understood it. But I couldn't before then. Whereas with reviews, there are a lot of people who are sitting out there thinking, oh, yeah, you know, maybe I'll grow into it. But no, really, no. The system's messed up for reasons that a lot of people don't understand. And that's why we're doing this cast, because the approach of getting rid of it is dumb.
So I love this first bullet point, because I don't think it's what people would expect to hear. Like, if I went to some random manager on the street and say, let me tell you what the number one problem is with performance reviews, they'd probably expect me to say something like, there's too many checkboxes, or doesn't have the right feels. They'd immediately go to the physical form of the performance review as being part of the problem. Matter of fact, I'm not going to beat up on HR, because I love HR. Because I'm just a loving guy, you know me.
Yes.
So most of my experience in corporate America was when they talked about changing the performance review, fixing the performance reviews. It was a new form. That was the answer, a new form. And you're saying that is not the number one problem with performance reviews, not the form.
No, the issue is trust. If I trust my boss, really, truly, if he or she has busted their tail on building credibility with me, gotten to know me, letting me get to know them enough, you can have almost any form and you'll be fine. And without trust, it doesn't matter what form you have. It doesn't matter how easy it is, how comprehensive it is, how digital, how online, how measurable it is with all quantification. Doesn't matter how, if it's all not digital, if it's all writing, it doesn't matter. The issue is, if you get to the end of the year, you know, it's like brushing your teeth every day. If you don't brush your teeth every day, when you go to the dentist and they say, well, you're going to lose 3 teeth at the end of a year or two, you say, gosh, what happened? I mean, was I in an accident? What happened yesterday that, you know, I don't remember anything different about today or this week that suddenly I'm losing 3 teeth. I didn't get hit in the mouth with a baseball. And the dentist just looks at you like you're crazy because, you know, good management is boring and unsexy and unpretty in its day-to-day and its discipline. And it's the discipline of building trust that allows you to have the tough conversation, parts of which you've already have before. So let's do this. We're going to talk about 3 major problems of the system. The first one is lack of trust, but let's agree, big picture here for a minute. We're going to summarize the failure of performance review systems, and then from those structural failings, create some ideas for effectiveness. We're just going to put it in a simple way to think about it, and then we're going to lay them out top down, and then we'll discuss them sort of bottom up, focusing on the managerial role first. Now, look, key point about all this, we are addressing the performance review systems that we see existing today, which presupposes then that most managers' annual review process is supposed to both provide formal organizational performance feedback communication to the ratee, right? When you sit down and hear from your boss how you're doing, and succession planning material for the organization. That's what it's become, as we said last week. It shouldn't be, hypothetically, although we don't like the word should here at Manager Tools, but that's what we have. And so we're not going to create a straw man of what something we don't have and then tear that apart. We're going to talk about what we have. And look, you can't have effective talent management without succession planning. You can't. I mean, if you don't know who's ready and who's not, if every single time there's an opening or there's a possibility or there's a reorganization, you have to go back to every manager in the organization and say, give me a quick one pager, give me a quick paragraph. Tell me, hey, Joe, tell me about Roberta. Is she, you know, do you think she could do this job? Well, tell me about the job. Well, actually, I don't know Roberta that well. She's only worked for me for 3 months and blah, 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 blah. Okay. By the same token, you can't have effective succession planning without input on performance, right? You can't, I mean, you have to know how people are doing. You can't have effective performance input without individual managers providing it. That's maybe one of the biggest systemic things I learned about management is the manager is the agent for the organization. There's a whole principal agent theory concept that I find fascinating. You know, does the agent do what the principal, does the manager do what the organization wants or not want? And you get into the whole issue of, oh, what's the phrase, Mike? Moral, what happened on Wall Street? I'm blanking on it. Moral risk, I think, where you can take risk for the organization, but the organization gets hurt, but you don't. So individual managers are the ones whom the organization assumes knows about the people who report to them. And because you know, therefore the organization knows. But the organization is a lot of people, and you have to be responsible for communicating it. Now, what ends up happening is the organization asks you, and as we've said, the way they ask you usually is an annual form. Some folks do a semi-annual review as well. But you're the one that provides the performance input that allows for talent management and succession planning. And you can't provide ethical succession planning and talent management input without frequent performance communication having been given to the ratee. You can't do it. You can't not, if Mike's my boss, he can't, well, he can, but he can't ethically not tell me how I'm doing and then tell the organization how I'm doing. And the reason for that is the organization assumes that if you can tell them, if Mike can tell the company how I'm doing, he has to know that the organization doesn't just expect him to catalog my performance, they expect him to improve my performance. And then we get back to the whole productivity thing and why we don't hire more people every time we get more business. We try to improve the capacity and capability of the people who work for us. We'd rather grow by 10% and not add any new employees because that makes us more productive and productivity leads to profitability. But the assumption is, and it's baked into the whole theory, we could spend hours talking about it, is that, of course, if you've done your job enough that you can tell the organization how a direct is doing, you understand, therefore, your job includes the improvement of that direct's performance because you are the organization and the organization wants to improve. It is the nature of humankind and organizations are human systems. And then, obviously, that same manager, in this case, Mike, to me, he can't provide me effective performance communications without first having developed trust with me. Now, some of you would say, well, actually, he can. And I would say, yeah, there are some cases where he could. You know, we say that our guidance is for 90% of the people, 90% of the time. I would actually say it's probably for 95 or more, 98% of the people, 95% of the time, because there are some people that are just exceptionally gifted. You know, as I've said before, I said in a speech, I think I said it in the book, if you're Bill Gates, if you're Andy Bechtolsheim, if you're Mike Morrisrow, you may not need our guidance. You're just so smart that you inhabit a different universe than me, and good for you, and I'd love to meet you. But the fact is, unless other people are telling you, you know, you're a genius. And to be clear about that, the reason where that comes from, Mike, is years ago in 1999, 2000, Wall Street Journal put out a special edition about the new century. And I take that back. It was another special issue. It was about genius. It was a whole section in the paper about genius. And they asked Andy Bechtolsheim, a genius in Silicon Valley history, they asked him, hey, how does it feel? Have you heard that, you know, people say about you that you're a genius? And Andy Bechtolsheim's answer was, that's what they say. You know, okay, that guy knows. And he probably doesn't need our help. He can figure it out on his own. He can do the math and understand organizational theory and so on. For the rest of us, though, we have to engage in the boring, not sexy stuff of building credibility with another person. And in fact, there are some people who are smart enough, the Bill Gates and Steve Jobs and Jack Welch's of the world, who, even though they are that smart, may be smart in a different way and not in the people way. And they actually have to do the hard work too. Because the long-winded point I'm making here is trust is in the eye of the direct. Just because you think people should want to work for you, that you're smarter than them, that you can tell them what to do, doesn't mean they're going to feel that you are a credible deliverer of performance communication if they don't trust you, if they don't like you. Now, it doesn't mean you have to show enormous vulnerability. We don't need to get around a campfire, sing kumbaya. We don't need to hold hands. But by gosh, I expect if you're going to affect my ability to help provide my family's food, clothing, and shelter, you do not get to sit on high and simply dictate to me what the world is above me in the organization such that it's a black box and I shouldn't have to worry and pat me on the head kind of thing. If you're going to do that, that's why we also measure retention in addition to results, because you're going to lose people. And there are all kinds of people that I've been asked to coach over the years who are so smart and they simply have no credibility, no trust, no love, no respect from their directs. They're useful, but Peter Drucker would say those useful people need to be in a job where they don't have anybody report to them. But of course, Manager Tools is about people who have people report to them. So if you're not willing or if you don't develop trust, you don't have that ethical underpinning. And the moment you don't have that, everything that I just went through, succession planning, talent management, performance management, organizational growth, all of that is at risk. And that's why it's problem number one. And by the way, there are managers who are doing performance reviews without the trust. In fact, when you read that line, managers can't provide effective performance communications without first having developed trust. And what somebody would say to me is, well, they don't. They haven't. That's why we don't like the performance reviews. And I said, yes, exactly right. And that's why the word effective is in there. Sure, as a manager, if Mike can absolutely give me a performance review, but if I don't trust him, if he doesn't have credibility, it's not going to be an effective performance review. It's not going to be anywhere near what the organization needs or expects from the manager. Really, what it boils down to is lack of trust. And trust is only something that two people can have between each other. There's no group trust. Lack of trust is the root cause of the failure of our modern day present performance systems. Without trust, the typical manager has an alienation from the direct. And whether we like to admit it or not, and I have this problem often, most of us who know DISC, those of us who are high D or high C or both have this. That's Mike. Mike's a high D, high C. I'm a high D, high I. So I maybe feel it a little bit less than Mike, but still significantly enough that I have to work on myself in order to be a good boss. But trust is a bit like a balance report on the emotional bank account between the manager and the direct. Knowledge of strengths and weaknesses, knowledge of proclivities, tendencies, likes, dislikes, friends, enemies, saying kind words to people. Whether you think kind words are reasonable or necessary because you're a emotionally withdrawn, analytical person is irrelevant. The data are in, and those things matter. It's you don't need to go giving sugar kisses to everybody all the time.
Oh, thank God. Thank you. I started to really worry.
Yeah, I know. I worry when I say that too. But friends, enemies, children's names, all these things build trust. And actually, as we've said before thousands of times on Manager Tools, the way to build trust is easy. You increase the quantity and quality of the communication with the person you want to build trust with. Quantity is easy. Talk to them more. Almost any vehicle will do. Quality is a little bit harder. There are two parts to quality. The first part is you have to talk to the other person about things that are important to them. That's how human beings measure quality. Also, you have to choose a medium that is most effective. You cannot build trust if we have two managers, Manager A and Manager B. Manager A manages by email, and Manager B also uses text messages, phone calls, face-to-face, video, and so on in order to form a more rich bond with their directs. Whether you like it or not, folks, email make you efficient, but you're going to lose in the long run, all other things being equal, which they never are, to the manager who chooses a better medium. And I would describe it as a richer medium on the scale of media that are available to us. You got to talk to your people more about things that are important to them through the right medium. And look, here's the thing. Trust building is not hard to think about to get ready for. It's that. It's quantity. It's quality. Communicate more with everybody who you want to build trust with.
That's the thing that we talked about years ago, right? Which is what I felt was important to me, right? Was a game changer for me, which is you don't have to naturally be a quote unquote a people person. And anybody who knows me knows that I'm not naturally a people person, right? So you can engage in a set of behaviors that will get the results of a people person just by changing your behavior, right?
I often say to groups, you know, one-on-ones, I'm the guy to learn one-on-ones from because I didn't like the idea. I was much more a high D 30 years ago than I am now. In fact, I was pretty well, I think, only a high D in the Army, maybe some I. I mean, I didn't think this stuff was valuable. And I often say to audiences, any people skills you think I have, if you think I'm a nice guy, it's all learned. Okay. That wasn't me when I was 22, 25, 26, 27. And some people say, you know, I don't really like that. I think everybody should kind of be a people person. And I told one guy one day, I said, look, I get it. And I don't say that to impress you. I say that to help you understand where I come from on this, in order to show you that I can be open about my strengths and weaknesses. But who would you rather have trying to build trust with you? Someone who's just naturally good at it, who likes people, or someone who knows it's important and is willing to engage in the tough behaviors for them relative to naturalness in order to build a relationship with you because they know a relationship of trust with you is important? And I would argue I'd give the nod to the person who has to work at it.
I agree.
Yeah.
Since it's true for me. Of course I'd agree.
Yeah. And when we talk about quality, I mentioned two things, medium and also talking about what's important to the other person. We've all met the person who talks to us a lot about themselves. I mean, very few people like that, except somebody else is just like it. So if you want to build trust with somebody else, most especially someone over whom you have some role power, you have to communicate with them more often than probably what you think is reasonable, and you must do it about things that are important to them in the medium that is the richest one you can afford relative to all your other constraints. And if we're busy, and we get that you're busy, guys, if you don't make time for those communications, if we don't schedule time for them, if we don't say this has got to be a priority, otherwise it won't happen, then it won't happen. Something else, too, I've learned recently, Mike. I probably should have learned this 5 to 7 years ago. And I had all these examples in front of me, and it wasn't until a client manager said something to me in the right way that I put together all the data I'd been gathering and ignoring because I didn't have a way to describe it. Somebody said to me, I don't have to do one-on-ones to build trust with my directs. I'm trustworthy, meaning he was worthy of trust. Folks, just because you think yourself is trustworthy doesn't mean you have any advantage over other managers to build trust with other people. Being trustworthy is an individual trait, and frankly, largely overestimated. And it's only a small part of building a trusting relationship. It doesn't matter how trustworthy you think yourself if you're not willing to engage in relationship building. The trust you feel for yourself is important in terms of your self-worth and ability to stay sane. But it's the other person's score of your trust that matters. Now, if you believe yourself trustworthy, you should have no problem engaging in relationships. None. Unless you think that your role power allows you to not do so. But the key is the willingness to build, build a relationship. If you do that and you are trustworthy, close enough to your own belief about trustworthiness, you'll be fine. But if you're not willing to build the relationship, if you're not willing to trust that my score for your trustworthiness will be close to yours, you're not going to ever build trust with me.
So problem one. Okay, we talked about that. What's the next problem with performance reviews? We're probably going to get into the form now, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's the form. It's always the form. If you don't have trust, there's a gap, and there's risk. Trust reduces your risk in interaction with someone else. The less trust you have, the more risk you have, and the more risk you feel in more situations. And if you don't have trust, then risky conversations, and the classic one is performance communications, particularly negative performance communications, simply happen less often and are less effective. Because too many of us don't build the trusting relationship with our directs that we need to, we end up talking ourselves out of discharging our duty to deliver the frequent performance communications. And if you don't deliver frequent performance communications, you end up not having the credibility and ethical position to give aggregated performance communications at the end of the year. Now, why is that? I mean, we won't get too psychological here, but if Mike is my boss and we trust one another, that trust insulates us from the shame and embarrassment of hurting others. The shame and embarrassment, that's what the risk is. The risk is I'm going to feel shame. I'm going to hurt them. They're going to be angry at me. It's a little bit of a withdrawal from the emotional bank account. So if we lack trust, it exposes us, that low trust exposes us to shame and embarrassment of another person when we tell them they failed. And exposing another person to embarrassment exposes us as managers to the risk of their loss to the organization. And we know that we're measured and we don't want to lose people. I think most managers, when we think about retention, the manager doesn't think, ooh, it'll affect my retention scores. Manager thinks, oh my God, I'll have to hire somebody else. And that takes a whole bunch of time and is really hard.
Exactly.
So the organization sees it as a retention problem. The manager sees it as a time management problem.
Yeah. So we want to avoid shame and embarrassment, right? We want to avoid embarrassing our directs and potentially having them leave. And so we just, as a natural consequence of all this, we just communicate less about performance to our directs.
It's completely rational. You justify it, we justify it, and it's a total emotional equation that makes complete sense.
Right. Pain avoidance, right?
It's pain avoidance. The problem is, you don't want to go to the gym because you don't want to hurt, you don't want to sweat, you don't want to take 45 minutes or an hour out of your day, and then you wonder why in a year you're not fit. You wonder why when you get to our age that the doctor says, you have high blood pressure. For the record, I don't. Yeah, it's pay me now or pay me later. And so when we communicate less frequently about performance and we avoid that because it somehow damages that tenuous relationship that we don't really have because we don't have trust, unforced turnover causes us to not do the stuff we're supposed to do. And basically what happens is managers want to feel like they're doing something. And so we whip up some euphemisms. They don't taste so good in the minds of the direct. The direct says, oh yeah, he said that to her the other day, or I know what that means, that vague statement. Like, hey, we really need to work hard on this, or let's try to do better. Basically, let's try to do better this project than the last project is a way of saying, last project stunk, but I didn't talk to you about it because I'm afraid to because I don't have trust. So we whip up some euphemisms. They taste really bad, and then they curdle in our mouth because we don't have the trust. We don't have the relationship. If you're going to talk to me at the end of the year about my performance, in all but very extremely unusual cases, frequent performance communications along the way, building credibility, ethical, essentially an ethical standing to tell me how my family is going to be recompensed for my time at work next year. If you don't do that, essentially those things are prerequisite to the trust. And the absence of frequent performance communication causes performance reviews to lose their credibility. And thus we have the system we have today.
Yeah. Well, we're getting ready to talk about the third of the problems we see with performance reviews, which is organizational non-support. But before we do, I think it's pretty interesting that the first two problems, lack of trust between managers and directs, and lack of performance feedback, have absolutely nothing to do with HR or the powers that be that create these performance reviews. It's all in the hands of and the responsibility of the manager. So I think that to be interesting and true.
I agree. There are two ways to think about that. One is we could start an HR tools cast. We could start an organizational tools cast. But no, this is not HR tools or organizational tools. This is manager tools. The second thing I will say is if you're a manager, you are the organization. I've said many times before that when people picture large organizations and they see a triangle on an org, you know, sort of an org chart, that if you just made all the people in the org chart a bunch of little dots, it would look like a pointillist painting of a triangle. Senior person at the top and all the frontline people way down at the bottom. But inside that triangle are hundreds or thousands of other little triangles. It looks like actually little facets in a diamond. That's the way I see organizations, is let's talk to the organization by talking to everyone in the organization other than the frontline workers. And essentially, if we reach a critical mass of that, we will have reached the organization, even though we're not talking to the figurehead or the spokesperson of the organization, the senior person at the top who's responsible ultimately for everything, because he or she doesn't have bandwidth to listen to boring manager stuff. So the third thing, though, and most managers, I don't think, realize this. They get exposed to it every once in a while, but in the big scheme of things, it's not important enough for them to get upset about and go, you know, where's my stuff? Now, if you're a VP and your organization doesn't do this, then you'll get exercised about it. Because even if managers were doing our individual parts, that system of performance reviews would still be broken in many, many organizations. And that's because it is an organizational system. It needs organizational support in order for it to work. We need to resuscitate it at an organizational level. And we don't mean to be anti-HR, but since we just threw managers under the bus, both for not building trust and for not communicating about performance, HR is not doing nearly enough either in the organizations we see to support managers, providing them data out of the system, accurate, candid, actionable performance data, both back to managers in some cases, depending upon how high you are in the organization, and to the organization in general around the talent management and succession planning that the organization must inevitably do when it gets big enough so that one person at the very top can suddenly not understand everything, which happens very quickly, by the way, folks. Listen to our cast called The Rule of 150. So some of the things we could do or not do is HR has to stop changing the system every 2 years. And actually, they don't change the system. They just change the form. But to many HR people, the form and filling it out is the system. And that's like saying, I don't know, a clue on a boat is the boat, right? That's not, the clue doesn't represent everything the boat is. And some manager filling out a form doesn't represent the value of the performance management system. I mean, have you ever gotten sustained positive responses? I'm talking to HR here. Have you ever gotten sustained positive responses to any change to the measurements taken and therefore the forms used? And the answer is no. I don't know anybody could say that. They've said that would say yes. It's putting a fresh coat of paint on a house that's fallen down, I think. Further, managers aren't trained well, and that training would happen by HR, or HR thoroughly assisting the manager's manager. Who else besides the manager's leaders or HR would do that training? The only thing we see HR, most HR doing. And folks, if you're in HR and you feel that I'm being too hard on you, please send me a mail. I'll be happy to write back, say I'm apologizing. You may in fact be the exception. And if you are, well done. But that doesn't mean that it's not true that 80% of the places I go, this is what I see. What we see HR doing is tracking down unsubmitted performance reviews. That's proctoring. That's not leadership. When does HR ever build a relationship? I can't recall, but this is unfair. What I'm about to say is unfair because I know it's out there. Right now, though, I can't recall a single case of an executive or a manager or director or whomever who said to me, actually, I've got a really good relationship with my HR person. She reached out and we had a 15-minute conversation about how I was going to handle this particular person's performance review. And this HR person knew me, knew the person I was reviewing, and understood the politics of the situation. We were able to work it out, as opposed to HR saying, hey, you need any help? Hey, just get them in on time kind of thing. So, I mean, how can we think of HR as a business partner, which, by the way, HR should never say, if all they're doing is tattling on us to get our homework done and get it in on time? And frankly, it's all done online, so we should be able to see red, yellow, green pretty easily. But look, if I were the HR business partner, and in the next life, I'm sure I'll either come back as a cockroach or I'll get my wish and I'll be an HR business partner. And only after having been a line manager.
Did you really do that? You just like compare HR folks to cockroaches?
No.
Oh my God.
Dude, I've just opposed them. I just said, I'll get my wish and I'll get to be an HR business partner in a large organization. And I'll get to be really aggressive, building relationships with the managers and directors and executives I support. And I'll tell the VP that I support, the performance review system is mine. And oh, by the way, you can give me 5 minutes or 15 minutes or half an hour, but whatever time you give me, I will be able to convince you that if you don't get your managers to start doing performance communications, and believe me, bub, I'm going to check, you guys will have no credibility at the end of the year, and you and I will be left holding 5 pounds of crap being trying to stuff into a 3-pound bag. And so I'll say, okay, I got a couple hundred managers. I got to build some relationships with them. I can do that. And I'm going to start talking to them. What are you doing? Tell me about the last time you gave feedback. Just so you know, I'm going to be reaching out to your directs, asking them how they're doing. And the only thing worse than me hearing no is me hearing from a direct, my boss told me you were going to call and I should tell you, yes, he gives me plenty of performance communication. Right? I've actually been in that call on the phone with somebody when they said, yeah, they told me you were going to call.
Of course, the direct no, he's completely thrown his boss under the bus, which is awesome.
Well, the boss had earned it, basically.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. So, and then we go further and we say, who's aggregating all this data? Who's providing it back to managers? I mean, I don't hear managers saying, oh, yeah, I get a nice report back. Shows me spread and gaps and opportunities and so on.
I've never seen that, by the way. I'm 57 years old. I've been in organizations a long time. I've never, ever seen it.
Yeah.
I've asked for it, but never seen it.
If there's any kind of rankings going on, and many organizations have them, HR is communicating someone else's decision rather than leading the way. Who's gathering the reviews? Who's reviewing the reviews? Who's preparing to lead discussions on succession planning? This should be HR and organizational leadership, but usually it's just leadership. And it ends up being, thank you, Dan McGuire, the steel cage deathmatch meeting, which is used before we have to lay people off. And we're not deciding who's going to get more. We're deciding who's going to get the ultimate less. And for the record, there's a cast for that.
In my career, I've probably been through, let me think, 15 layoffs of one shape, form, or the other, right?
Wow. I didn't realize it was that high, dude.
Oh, 15. Yeah. Yeah. A lot. I've been through a few. And every single time, it's the steel cage death match.
Yeah.
I have never seen performance reviews and the performance review system as in any way, shape, or form an input into the decisions about who stays and who goes. Can you think of a bigger black mark on performance review system that one of the most painful, impacting things we do, it provides no input to? It's just amazing to me.
Yeah. Now, I also want to say something in defense of HR here, because we talk to managers every week. Sometimes we talk to HR, and when we talk to HR, we end up saying, hey, they're not doing this or they're not doing that. And that's unfair, and I should be careful about that. I know, HR, that your ranks have been cut I know that frequently you are asked to support an organization who essentially doesn't want your support in any other role other than admin and maybe salary negotiations or compensation and benefits analysis and input and support and so on. I remember being at Genentech a couple of years ago, and they asked me to start my training a little bit late because one of their HR business partners had come in and they needed a half an hour to talk about the new performance communication system and performance ranking system. And they talked to this small group of managers in detail about what was happening, what they had to do, and how it was. And I got to tell you, it was really impressive. They were open to questions, and actually they ran long, which is always the danger of letting somebody talk before you. And I didn't care because I was so impressed with that. Now, that's my way of tipping my hat to good HR, and Genentech has that. But that's a rare exception in my experience.
Well, good. So we've been going a while here. So we have some solutions, folks. We're not going to talk about the problems, but again, you're going to have to wait till next week for that.
Yeah, and I apologize, folks. This is a long thing. And if some of you who listen as casts come out, you know we just recently did a cast on the Manager Tools one-page performance review. We're doing this cast about why they're broken, but the solution is not to get rid of them. And we have a future cast coming up about the Manager Tools performance review system. Not the form, but the system. How to set up the system around the form. And it's not very hard. You've heard us talk bits and pieces about it over the years. You could probably put it all together. And in part, the reason we're doing the system, I'll just mention this now, and I suspect this cast is long enough, Mike, that the guy I'm about to tip my hat to won't get to it. But a couple of years ago, one of our longtime listeners and friends of the firm, Tom Hausman, said to us, you know what? You guys need to do an encyclopedic review of every cast you've ever done and come up with all the deliverables that an effective manager has to do. Now, that's a double-edged sword because I think what Tom meant was there's so much good stuff and it's spread out on all the casts. I don't, you know, it's not easy for me to catalog and figure it out. And in my mind, I think about putting it into a calendaring system of some sort. But I think the other side is, I think he was sort of raising an eyebrow and saying, have you basically made it such that managers have to do nothing but manage their people and they don't have time for their own work? Tom, I'll just tell you, I don't think we have because we do all the stuff we recommend and Mike and I still have time to do plenty of our own work. But that said, that's coming. And in thinking through that and having a conversation with Wendy here at Manager Tools recently, I said, you know what? We really need to put to bed the whole idea of what system would recommend. And the system is not just a form. The system is not just performance communications. The system also includes succession planning, which those of you who have been listening for a while know that we've done succession planning as well. And we're going to do a future series on talent management as well.
Yeah, that should be good. All right, my friend. That was awesome. I think next week will be even better because we like solutions, right?
Yeah, solutions are better than problems.
All right, my friend. We'll see you later.
Thanks, partner.
Bye. That's it, everyone, for this week. We'll finish this one up next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long, folks.